working middle class, the people that work, are actually the ones who do the work. You know?
Absolutely, right.
They're like, they're making the product, they're shelving the stores,
yep.
they're doing all that work,
yep.
and they make so much less.
It's, see, now you're getting into Marxism. Mm-hmm. You're getting into Marxism because what you're describing is people's labor creates all wealth, and that's really true. We have it backward. You don't have it backwards. You're right. But a lot of people think someone like Trump or some rich person creates wealth, but they really don't. All they do is they hire other people to manipulate investments and capital. But the workers do the actual work. Yeah. And the other thing that's Marxist about that is that you didn't get into this explicitly, but you touched on it. The way they make their profit is the difference between what people are paid and what they can sell the service or the product for in a large sense, not just an individual piece, but a large sense. And the difference between that and other costs is where their profit comes from. So if they can keep labor costs low, there's all these articles, gee, why aren't wages going up? Because we don't have unions that are strong enough right now to fight for them. We don't have a mass workers' party or left-wing socialist party to fight for them. So people are on their own, and they can't fight the big corporations on their own unless they get organized. So the wages stay low in order to keep up the high profits. Now, we just hit our first hour. It's noon or 12:01, and we're forced to give our legal ID, speaking of the long arm of the capitalist state. We're WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford. And if you just joined us, we are a show called Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. We're here every other Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I'm Jeff, and my guest hosts are...
Justin, his son.
And Matthew, not his son.
Matthew could be my son, but he's not. He's an independent agent, also a member of Social Alternative like me, and we're doing our work in Worcester.
Worcester.
But we're here in Medford, and Somerville, because I used to be based in Somerville, to do this show, you know, today. For your amusement and enjoyment and edification. By the way, this station is also called Tufts Educational Radio. I like that. Also known as Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. We're a little slice that community-based. And you're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, Tufts. And so that's our legal identification and then some. And we'll get back into what we're talking about. Actually, we'll switch gears. I think we're done with Trump care for the moment.
Also,
yeah, go ahead. Talking to the mic.
Follow him on Facebook and Twitter.
I forgot about Facebook. We have a Facebook page, of
we
course.
We are such bad advertisers.
Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. Check it out. Go to socialistalternative.org, socialistalternative.org on the web, but with your computer. Go to WMFO.org to live stream this program or to see it and get it in archive. Go to Fenian Rising, F-E-N-I-A-N Rising dot, I think they're on Facebook now, Fenian Rising on Facebook. They've picked up, downloaded some of our shows. I don't think they're doing it on a regular basis now, but they've definitely done it off and on. And there you go. Now, I saw this poll that I thought was really interesting. It's the kind of stuff we really like on the show where it goes against the sort of perceived wisdom, sort of urban myth wisdom, if you want to call it that. And it's called Think Americans Are Conservative. And it's from a book called Welcome to the Revolution by Charlie Derber, D-E-R-B-E-R. And I saw it on Facebook put out by progressive, hashtag progressive majority or something like that. What was that noise?
I'm sorry. That's my phone.
Is it going to blow up?
No.
Oh, good, 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 good. Yeah, it's one of those smartphones that make dumb noises. Just kidding.
Yeah.
So anyway, listen to this. Think Americans are conservative? And then it's got all these statistics that kind of are a little bit mind-blowing. 92% of Americans want a society with far less income inequality. That's from the Harvard Business School, a poll in 2010. Now, 92%, that gives us something to work with as socialists. Mm-hmm. Because basically, if you want far less income inequality, you got to be a socialist. You got to want a revolution. You got to want no capitalism, but democratic socialism. Now, here's a good one. 79% want tougher Wall Street regulation. That's from Lake Research 2015. That's a no-brainer in some ways. I think even people that are fairly conservative are like, yeah, the big corporations are out of control, manipulating money and stocks and so on. Here we go. Now, this should be higher, but this is a decent number. 60% of Americans believe the economic system unfairly favors the wealthy. Pew Research 2014. Should be more. That's like, duh. Where have you been? What kind of television have you been hiding under? Come on.
Do you live under a rock?
You live under a televised rock? Get your head out of your computer. Come on. But hey, 60% is pretty good. Pretty good. And I think some people aren't, I don't think people are stupid, by the way. That's not why I'm saying this. I do believe a certain number, there's a lot of enforced ignorance. And also, I can see people that are smart enough to say, I'm a conservative, and so I want to skew the polling data here, and I will say, no, I don't believe this economic system unfairly favors wealthy, even though I know it does. You know what I mean? Because I think that's a good thing. If I'm, you know, I'm a conservative, I could think inequality is a, if I'm a libertarian or a libertarian, as I like to say, you could say, oh yeah, wealth inequality, good for society, yay. Like, what's that guy Rand Paul saying all the time around the healthcare debate? Trump care doesn't go far enough. Let's make them really suffer.
Right.
You know? But, you know, all the stuff I'm living off of the state from my healthcare and Congress and all that, that's okay. Let's not touch that. That's why I say libertarians, because there's no way. I'd like to see anyone either survive, not survive, I don't want to get into this off the grid stuff, but like, I'd like to see any group of people survive without any sort of government.
Right.
You know, and that could be a workers' government, and it could be in the future we could do that under communism, but under capitalism needs the state like an iron fist needs a glove to hide it. You know, capitalism needs the state to enforce private property, to enforce the exploitation and coercion we talked about earlier. That's WMFO.org, by the way. Justin's writing down the radio station. 58% support Medicaid for all. That's one of our main demands. Kaiser Research, 58%. You may think, listening to Social Alternative Radio, we're a minority. 58%, though, support our demand, Medicaid for all.
Look
at that, buddy. 67% say police violence against minorities is a serious problem. Now, that's a number that should be much higher, but 67%, you know, that's a start. 55% support free college tuition for all students. And again, should be higher. Good start. You need free college. Yeah, that's something Justin and I talk about that's very political, but we don't always talk about it that politically. Sometimes I'm using it as a tool to get them to read or whatever, but I'm like, Justin, you know, we have no money for college with the way college costs now. How are you going to afford college, man? You're going to have to get a scholarship. If you're going to get a scholarship, those are like under huge, a lot of people trying for them. You have to be the best of the best, blah, blah, you know, that argument. So I'm basically putting unfair pressure on my kid. Thanks. But it's the system.
That's why I went to a state school and I'm still in debt.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like the state schools are getting, did you see what UMass just did? 4%,
oh,
was
yeah.
it? 3-4%?
That was ridiculous.
Every year they're raising the tuition. So now, and someone gave the figure, like, do you remember the figure for UMass by any chance? It was quite high. It was like...
Well, I didn't go to UMass.
No, I know. I'm just saying, do you remember that when that was on in the media?
No, I don't.
I don't have that.
But...
It was quite high. It was like, to come up with that kind of money, like 17,000 or 15,000.
And the UMass system, it takes in more out-of-state people, too,
yep.
than
and they pay
the
more.
State colleges and university system. Yep.
But my point is, like you know, the thing that capitalism does, it keeps working people from ever creating that chunk of change thing until they're, and some of them not until they're very old, but most people not at all, where you never have like tens of thousands of dollars sitting around for the next big bill.
Yep.
Oh, first year tuition, you know, 40,000. I don't have 40,000. Of course you don't. Go take a loan out
yep.
that you're going to be paying for the rest of your freaking life with interest and everything else. It's an insane system.
Well, and so even bigger in college news, because you brought up the UMass system, I don't know if you heard about Mass College of Pharmacy in Boston. They
no.
are in big accreditation trouble because they have too many students to too few teachers. That's one of their big issues. And so now a lot of these students who are in there right now are panicking because their degrees are on the line.
Yep.
And it shows that especially private educators only care about getting the students in, getting
yep.
the money in,
yep.
rather than actually providing quality education and getting people out there with useful skills like pharmacy and health sciences out there to help other people.
Well, you know, since capitalism is an unplanned system, people are forced, workers are forced to chase money in the sense of chasing the current trends in what seems to pay more than other things. What right. sort of training do you want to get? Well, a lot of people sit, and it makes perfect sense in a twisted way, under capitalism right now, in the United States right now, as healthcare is such a problem, healthcare is a industry, unfortunately, shouldn't be, where as a worker, you can tend to make more money than a lot of other things. Part of that is due to unionization, but part of it isn't. Part of it is scarcity and stuff. So to your example, Matthew, people go to become a pharmacist thinking, we got it made now. I got my foot in the door. I'm going to get that pharmacy degree. I don't care how much I go in debt. I'm going to make big bucks when I get out. Now, I don't know if that's really true anymore. I don't know that many pharmacists, but I would bet you that there's a glut. It's like Justin was talking about people talking about becoming lawyers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
all my friends want to be like lawyers when they grow up. They want to be like, I want to make so much money when I'm a lawyer, you know, because some lawyers do make money, but not all of them.
I know a little bit about lawyers because I took the LSATs when I was old and because a friend of mine did. A friend of mine got me interested and I took the LSATs and I did better than she did. I'm not saying that to brag. I'm just saying that she had the money to go and I didn't. And at 30-something, I didn't know who was going to fund a 30-something lawyer wannabe. I didn't think the money would be out there. I wasn't really that interested, to be honest, either. So I didn't go to law school even though I did well in the LSATs, right? So here's the deal, right? This wasn't happening then, but it happened soon after that. I kept reading the law profession, or if you want to call it that, the law industry was getting glutted with lawyers.
Yep.
And that therefore they were taking advantage of that. They're also finding ways to have machines scan legal documents to have. So anyways, the whole thing was getting compressed. Paralegals were not making as much as they used to. Lawyers were not making as much as they used to, blah, blah. I don't know if that's the trend still happening, but I think I read that pretty clearly. How long before that happens with pharmacists?
Well,
or is
actually,
it already happening?
That is already happening in pharmacy. Yeah. So.
Sorry. Like the game Life. You should know that, right?
Yeah, it's a great game.
Everyone's like, I want to be a lawyer. I want to get the lawyer card because that's the card that pays the most. But remember, that game's kind of old now.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be like the same.
Nope. Their life is always behind.
Exactly.
Yeah. Except for...
I want to play it.
I want to get that too. One thing that... that's funny. We don't go into bookstores much because we don't have any money to buy books right now. But we had some time to kill before we went and saw. What did we go see?
Spider-Man.
Yeah, it was good. By the way, a little plug for the new Spider-Man. Anyway, so we're killing some time for the new Spider-Man, looking at a Barnes and Noble. And anyone's been in a Barnes and Noble lately? And I used to work for Barnes and Noble. It's a horrible corporation.
Oh, wait, it was Planet of the Apes.
We saw Planet of the Apes Part 2, also worth seeing, or Part 3, whatever it is. Anyway, so. So we're going in Barnes and Noble. Have you been in a bookstore lately, Matthew?
Yes. And remember, I worked there for a month too.
Yeah. Include you got out. Anyway, they're turning the store into gadgets and games more than books. So it's about half. Plus, if you add up the cafe plus all the area devoted to games and gadgets, that's over half the store.
Yeah.
Toys, yeah. But anyway, so we're in there looking at the games and some books. And they had the old school Life available for $28, which doesn't sound bad, but we couldn't afford it.
Right.
We're like, no, we're not going to buy that. Then they had the old school Risk, you know, the one in the long box. I love Risk. We can't afford that. $28, that's like the going price, I guess, for board games these days. And Justin, of course, doesn't care about board games. Ultimately, he wants an Xbox, but I've resisted so far. Anyway.
Who doesn't? Okay, like, let's be honest. Let's be real here.
Oh, my
goodness.
Now, let's keep it real. We can't afford an Xbox. All right, so anyway, last but not least on my Think Americans Are Conservative poll, two more. 75% of voters support equal pay for women as a major determinant of their vote. Now, you would think also that would be more, but listen to the way it's phrased, major determinant of their vote. Any jerk politician, any corporate politician can say, I'm for equal pay for women, and then not do anything about it.
Right.
You know, and that's exactly what's happened so far.
Do something.
87%, if you're going to talk, you got to talk into the mic.
You have to do something.
Right, there you go. 87% support funding more research into renewable energy sources. Yale 2010. Now, 87%, that's high enough to think. That cuts across a lot of people that are pretty ignorant about other types of politics, but they're for renewable energy, so that is very cool. That is
well, and it's also interesting, right, because renewable energy sources already exist.
Yep.
And the United States dropped the ball in the 70s and 80s. ExxonMobil was a huge part of that and covering up some information. But we went for nuclear energy, which was a terrible idea.
Terribly dangerous. Still is.
And
Japan.
A bunch of countries already have a significant amount of their energy provided by renewable sources, including wind, solar, hydroelectric.
Yep. In fact, I'm going to mention a couple things that I've just seen on Facebook that maybe a lot of people don't know about yet, or maybe they do, but like the world of renewable energy that's capitalism. The world of renewable energy is much more varied than we're led to believe. It's not just, which I love these things, but it's not just the wind farms, yep, and the turbines. It's not just the solar. And it's not just hydro, yeah, which can be, if it's a dam, it can be a problem in itself.
There's also geothermal. And
brilliant. How'd you know that? Go ahead. What else?
I take science, Dad.
Brilliant.
So I remember reading this article in our science class. There are like three of them. Like, you get to choose. I was the only one in the class to choose this one. It's also, there's only one, but... okay, but basically it was like all the renewable types of energy, right? And the least used one was geothermal, and I wondered why, and the reasoning behind it just wasn't good. They just said it was more expensive, right, for, like, people to do it, right?
Well,
like,
years ago, sorry to interrupt.
It's okay.
Just to keep on geothermal for 1 second. Years ago, I went to one of those solar tables you'll see at, like, mm-hmm, a town fair or whatever, and they're trying to pitch me solar energy, and I'd already looked into it, and for a variety of reasons didn't do it at the time, and, I said, so how's this look? The guy was very chatty. I go, how's this look in the future? He goes, actually, geothermal is really more efficient and probably will take over. And the way he described it to me, I could be wrong, is the reason it's a little expensive, and I don't know if it's more expensive, is that you have to dig down into the ground, basically, to get that layer of geothermal, whatever it is, wind or temperature or whatever, and then pump that up into the house or something like that. I don't know how it works exactly, but, you know, it's that initial digging into the ground to a certain level that's I think, costs money. But it could be a lot more, obviously. It's like, again, the unplanned nature of capitalism. That could be used a lot more. But I had a couple other examples. Did you have other examples?
There's also... No. You go.
Okay. So, wave technology. Now, technology, in the old sense, seemed a little intrusive. I never really actually read that, but it looked like it to me. Like, you'd set up these big things in the edge of the sea and the sand. They got totally different technology now for that. You can be in a slow moving current, and they have things now that can pick up enough energy from that to make it worthwhile and power a lot of stuff. You could have the larger contraptions too, doing that as well out in the middle of the ocean. You could have also this interesting, you have combinations of things, you know, like you have the solar thing powering something to power something else, blah blah. Anyway, I won't get into that. But you have also besides wave energy, which is underutilized, that can be utilized a lot more. There was another one. Boom, 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 boom. Oh yeah, no, it's a variation of the one we already mentioned. Wind farms. Okay, yeah. I've seen even progressive people argue in the past, and I really hate it because I think they overstated their point terribly, that it hurts birds. I think that's really overstated. I haven't heard much about that lately, but they've got whole new technologies on the turbines that don't use the big.
Yep.
The big things. They look like things that are like a barber pole, an old-fashioned barber pole, a contraption.
Yep.
Only instead of glass, it's open, and the wind goes into it, and within this enclosed thing, which can be relatively small or big, it turns it around, and that turning turns a turbine and creates power.
Correct.
So you're not using any big things that can hit a bird or something, right?
Right.
Now, if the bird is stupid enough to fly into that little opening, or that fairly big opening, that bird didn't pass the evolutionary test for the day.
Well, who hasn't gotten a bird in there, you know, their ventilation?
They're hitting a window or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I'm not anti-bird, but I'm just saying chemicals are killing a lot more birds than any alternative energy source.
And balloons.
Also, speaking of, like,
really?
Wind.
Oh, yeah.
Regular balloons?
Well, the latex balloons aren't biodegradable. They find a lot of those in a bunch of...
Regular birds?
Regular birds.
I didn't know that. I thought it was, like, ducks and stuff.
Other animals. And,
Plastic is horrible. That's the one thing about capitalism. One reason you should become a socialist out there, if you're not, is plastic. To move from a plastic-based economy, which is in turn oil-based, because plastic is so horrible in so many ways, that's going to take enormous international planning of the economy that capitalism is completely uninterested in doing and completely incapable of doing. What were you going to say? Sorry.
Yeah, so I remember in science class as well, we read this article together that was like wind turbines of the future, and one of them was like, what are they called? Blimps? Yeah, you know blimps?
Yep.
They would put a wind turbine on the bottom of a blimp.
Nice.
and apparently, but it would be moving limp. It would just be like attached to the ground through wires and all that. And for all the things in an article, the main excuse was like money. It's too much money. It's like $1 billion,
yeah,
right?
True, everything like, they say.
But you hear on the radio, like, Trump gave like $1 trillion to fund his like fun stuff.
Yeah, they find the money for that they want. That what was that aircraft carrier? How many billions that came out recently? Like,
I can't even remember.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of that, worker wages flat, but since 1978, CEO, that stands for Chief Executive Officer pay, has soared by an outrageous 937%. That's from Common Dreams, 7/20/2017. And listen to this. Rising executive pay, because CEOs are executives, is not connected to overall growth in the economic pie. This goes totally against what even Democrats will talk about, totally against what you're taught in school, all this stuff. Wages for most American workers have remained basically stagnant for decades, and I'm raising my hand in agreement to that, personally. But a new report published on Thursday by the Economic Policy Institute shows that the CEOs of America's largest firms have seen their pay soar at a constant and quote-unquote outrageous clip. Simply put, money that goes to the executive class is money that does not go to other people. That's from Lawrence Michel, Economic Policy Institute. I'll give one more stat here. Between 1978 and 2016, CEO pay rose by 937%. By contrast, typical workers saw painfully slow economic compensation growth by 11.2% since 1978. The average, America's largest firms made an average of $15.6 million in compensation, or 271 times the annual average pay of the typical worker. So this article is filled with more stats. I'd encourage you to read it. It's from Common Dreams. And I'm sort of reading it as a... Were you going to say something, Justin?
What? No.
Sort of reading it as a segue to... not just to complain, although we should, but because in Seattle, members of Socialist Alternative have led a fight, a successful one, to get a law taxed. It hasn't gone into effect yet. It's being challenged. Get a law taxed to tax the rich. And I don't know if you heard about this in the corporate media. I don't think they made too much about it. You could go to counterpunch.org July 19th.
And the churches.
2017. Yeah, that brings up a great thing. Let's do a little segue, a little diversion on that. As we've said in previous shows, there's no money, we're told. Do you know that churches and schools, like universities, big rich universities like Harvard, they don't get taxed? And you go to a city, who's got all the land? Who's got like what little open land is left? They usually do. Churches, yeah. You know, and universities. Can you imagine, like, some universities pay a few pennies, they call it payment in lieu of taxes or payment in kind, but it's always tiny and it's inconsistent. And here we have, if you just move the tax to tax the religious institutions, which should be taxed, and tax the big universities especially, boom, you got tons more money. Still not enough because it's capitalism, right? They find ways to get rid of stuff, you know, claw back the wealth for themselves, the capitalists. But it's a huge step in the right direction. Could immediately fund, like, free education for everybody, you know?
So there are so many churches. It's incredible. Like, well, we were going to Walden Pond. It's a pond in Concord, right?
Right. Very good.
We passed like 3 churches, and we were only like halfway there. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
Like,
churches are everywhere.
Space that's wasted.
Totally.
You know.
Yep. And if any of our religious listeners are offended, too bad. Because you need to get taxed. And churches take up too much room. I consider those givens. But anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Matthew.
Well, I think you have to look at it this way too, right? We have this issue where the churches are trying to be part of the political establishment. Yeah. Back when Massachusetts had its Death with Dignity law going to vote, I think that was back in 2014 or 2012, the churches funneled in a ton of money to getting people to vote no. And you can't be a part of the political establishment unless you're going to be paying into it.
Right. And that's really obvious in some southern states where the evangelical, well, not just southern, but a lot of southern, evangelical Christian groups are got their snout in everything, you know. They're trying to get, like, religious iconography and statues and stuff into the Justin's trying to sneeze. I said, no sneezing on air. So now he's going to have to, like, what are you going to do? Your face is going to explode inward or something?
I don't know.
So basically, they're trying to force religious statues, the Ten Commandments, whatever, on to city property.
Yep.
That's like their goal, is to really eliminate that separation of church and state thing as much as possible. And hey, like you said, Matthew, you want to be part of the state, you want to influence the state, pay up.
Yep.
Because everyone else is paying up.
Absolutely. You know? And once again, too, it's not, we're not necessarily just saying your church stinks or your religion stinks. What we're trying to get at is the fact that if you're taking up some kind of position, if you're taking up land that could be used for other things, you need to pay for it. Bottom line, and I understand that there are some churches struggling out there, and but at the same time, if you are struggling, you show it. That's been our position with a lot of different
small businesses, for example.
Yes, yeah. For like small businesses, open your books, show us.
Yeah.
Okay, if there's a problem, we'll work with you.
Yep.
But otherwise, the evangelical churches are not struggling. There are some big mega churches that are far from struggling. There are some televangelists who make big time bucks, and they don't get taxed because they fit in what the government considers religion.
Yeah. And the government, and if you're wondering, you want some historical context, the government is controlled by the capitalists, and the religions are controlled by the capitalists, and they both are part of the coercive apparatus of capitalism. You will have, literally, throughout U.S. history, religions play a role in enforcing, say, Jim Crow in the South, the apartheid of the South. You'll have religions enforcing, like, here's a colorful example, no pun intended, where the fascist and capitalist Henry Ford, who, by the way, in school, Justin, they might say, if they ever say Henry Ford, just raise your hand and say, he was a fascist, supported the Nazis, shut the F up. Don't really say the shut the F up part, but, you know, okay, say the other part. So anyway, basically, Ford got this idea, its actual plan, to exploit cheap labor of black people in the South by going to their ministers. It's a lot of black churches, paying them to move up north, setting them up in a nice church, physically speaking, giving them money to preach against unionization, to preach against the union. That was the key clause in the deal. So dutifully, those black ministers would preach against the union, and the black congregation was, they tried to brainwash them against the union. But here's the beauty of this story, because that's ugly, what we just heard, right? The beauty is, they ignored it. They did it for the most part. They didn't believe the ministers, and they went and organized the unions.
Well, the automotive industry was heavily unionized.
Well, not always, but that was towards an attempt to keep it from being unionized. So they would divide and conquer, black against white against black, the way that works in the United States so well, historically, for the capitalists, still is working to a certain extent, did not work in this case. Woo-hoo. Black workers joined the unions, wanted to be in the unions, were in the union, got in the unions. And the auto industry is a brilliant victory for working people internationally, not just there. So what was the main point, though, was the tax the rich thing in Seattle? Let's go back to that for a minute. So what happened in Seattle is, with the lead of Shamsawan, Socialist Alternative, we got a law passed, and that places a 2.25% tax on individual incomes over $250,000. And for married couples with incomes over $500,000, it's expected to raise as much as $175 million to fund affordable housing, education, transit, human services, and other critical needs. Now, quote, I'm quoting here from a Counterpunch article, July 19th, 2015, by Adam Ziemkowski and Rebecca Lieberman. They're both Socialist Alternative members, actually leading members out in Seattle. Quote, recognizing the significance of Seattle's new tax on the rich, the Los Angeles Times, big corporate media thing, reported, quote, a number of cities have adopted local income taxes, but no other city has solely targeted high wage earners, and few have adopted so high a tax rate. Now, this is a really important point, because the right wing makes a lot of money off of, gets a lot of support off of lumping, no, that's just not right, Democrats do this too, lumping all tax increases together. Like, we can't talk about raising taxes, they say, because people are already taxed to death. Well, which people? Working people, yes, are getting horribly taxed, but rich people are not. In fact, the whole thing is flipped. It used to be rich people got taxed higher, and corporations used to get taxed higher than workers. Now workers are getting taxed higher than rich people, and in many cases, corporations, when you look at the effective tax rate on corporations.
Yeah. And I'm
horribly wrong.
I'm sorry, 2.25%.
It's nothing. Pennies to the rich.
2.25% if your income exceeds $250,000 and $500,000 for married couples.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
And there's a millionaire tax going to be on the ballot, supposedly, in the fall in Massachusetts. It's also almost nothing. It affects about, I think I read it affects less than 2% of the population of Massachusetts, less than 0.2% or something. It really, but that's how concentrated the wealth is.
Yep.
See, that's what I think I've tried to say this to you, Justin. I try to say it to a lot of people that I know. When you think of inequality, it's not like a pyramid diagram, a few wealthy at the top and then it slowly goes down. No. It's like a radio tower antenna where it goes way, way high up in the sky because only a few people can exist on that thin antenna, but they have all the wealth.
Yeah. And
the rich are even richer, so much richer than the slightly rich. It's incredible.
Yeah,
and then it goes down and winds out a little bit until you get to the bottom. Yeah. And then it goes vastly wide.
Yep.
Not like a pyramid, but like a big splash of mud going all over the place in two directions if you can control it. Now, think about that kind of diagram when you talk about inequality in the United States. And so someone making $60,000, $70,000 a year, they're still down in that splash of mud, especially compared to the super rich. Sorry, go ahead.
No problem. Oxfam International is a group that releases a report every year on the income inequality. Their report from the start of this year was that the 8 wealthiest people in the entire world control as much wealth as the bottom 3.6 billion, the bottom 50%.
Was it half? 50%. Yes, I remember that.
Yep.
That is amazing. That's like that thing about Medicaid paying for half of all childbirths in the United States.
8 people control as much wealth as 3.6 billion people.
You should be listening, Mr. I'm not talking to the mic again, Justin.
I'm listening.
That's that statistic that Matthew just gave should make everyone a socialist automatically. The minute you hear that, it's like, bing, okay, I'm a socialist. I can't defend capitalism anymore. That's insane. That is just insane.
Also, this pains me to hear. It's like everyone's like, no, we can't make healthcare or college free because then the rich people will get even richer.
That's the weirdest argument I've ever heard in my life.
Sounds like an Alex Jones argument.
Yeah, doesn't it?
There's so few rich people in like the world.
Yes, there are.
Making college like
free
will have very little impact.
It gives them a little break in income that they already are getting so many other ways through taxes and everything else. It's negligible. It's nothing.
I hate
and that's the stupidest way to put it. Well, and so the fact that your friends are echoing that shows the power of the corporate media. They took a social welfare program that in other countries is a given, free education, and twisted it in some really crazy, Plato fun factory way into some sort of argument about welfare for the rich. You want to see arguments for welfare for the rich? They're everywhere.
Yep.
Welfare for the rich is the ACA. Mm-hmm. That's giving money to the insurance companies, forcing people to give money to the insurance companies. You want welfare for the rich? Look at the tax subsidies and outright subsidies energy companies get. Yep. Or right now, Wisconsin is trying to get that Applecom company from China, where all the workers are committing suicide, to come into Wisconsin. They're giving them billions of dollars just to set up shop. Frickin' Mayor Walsh, who people like in Boston. I hate Walsh. Mm-hmm. Walsh is a tool for the corporations. He's given up any union roots he claimed. I hate Walsh. He is getting so much money from the corporations. The Boston Globe printed out the list that this guy is bought and paid for. Bought and paid for Mayor Walsh.
Yep.
You know, here in Massachusetts, you might wonder if you're listening from another state or some other country, why Jeff is getting so excited right now, so angry. Well, it's because we live in a state controlled by the Democratic Party, except for every once in a while they get a Republican governor. The one in now is Charlie Baker. Now think of the word Charlie, the name Charlie. I'm going to get into that in a second. This is a state where people pretend that they're progressive. The politicians pretend they're progressive. So you try to start a $15 minimum wage and you find out the Democrats have already made it impossible to do it on a local level. Yep. You can only do it on a state level. Oh, and then you find out the Democrats have a bill for a $50 minimum wage. It probably, you don't know what it says. It could be total crap. Someone researched and found out it was, that it includes not including tipped workers. That's been sitting in the legislature for over a year, and they could pass it tomorrow because they control both houses of the legislature in Massachusetts. Then there's a Republican governor privatizing the crap out of the MBTA, hurting workers, hurting unions, and the Democrats are going along with it, right? So you have all this pretense here of progressivism and the reality of vicious inequality. What was that stat the other day that I put out on Facebook or email in Massachusetts, in Boston? Half or more, three quarters?
It's something like 80%, 70%.
Are making like a tiny
wage.
Making less than
$35,000 a year.
Can you imagine? That's always pre-tax. Another thing in a U.S. society, if you're lucky enough not to live here, and yes, I do mean that, you might actually live in a country where they calculate wages and stuff by net wages.
Yep.
Here, every statistic you're looking at is gross wages, which means they haven't even accounted for deductions and taxes yet.
Yep.
Which is ridiculous because your net wage is what you bring home and can actually spend.
Right.
Go to France, free healthcare, you know?
Yeah, France has its problems, but yeah, it's a step up.
Well, so, and here's the other thing. We talk about the Democrats, and Boston is entirely controlled by Democrats. City council, the mayor,
absolutely.
Everything. There was a report that came out a year or two ago. I don't know if it still holds true, but it's probably still not far from the truth. That Boston, despite being controlled by quote-unquote progressive Democrats, is the most segregated city in the entire country.
Probably, yep.
And has the most wealth inequality in the entire country.
Yep, I totally believe it. Segregated means, usually the way it's used, it means separated in its most basic term, but usually used to mean separation of racial groups. So segregation usually means, in U.S. context, separation of black people from white people, but it can also be other racial groups separated from each other as well. And there's a very good book I'd recommend to all our listeners called The Color of Law, just came out, and it shows that housing policy that has segregated black people from white people was a deliberate government and corporate policy, not an accident, not a question of white flight, not a question of preference or anything like that. In fact, there were racially mixed neighborhoods that the government went into and the banks went into and consciously did everything they could to divide the people along racial lines, send the white people one way, black people another way, whatever. You should really read this book, The Color of Law. It's not the first book like that. Anyone that has looked into what the real causes of racism are in the society has found there's institutional and structural racism that determines racism, and that the psychological components of racism are they're strong, unfortunately, in American society, but they are ephemeral. They've come and gone from time to time. They can be overcome. Zinn used to write about that in a lot of people's history. There were times where there's a tendency. I've seen this in my own political work. There's usually a tendency in a union struggle, community struggle, towards multiracial struggle, towards, you know, people helping each other across racial lines and so on, because it just sort of makes sense. You need more people to fight the real power in society. In terms of a lot of things that seem to be purely just psychologically based or idealistically based, it's in people's heads for a material reason. You know, if people are forced to live apart, you're going to have more racism than if people are living together, and that's certainly what's happened in American history. Deliberately, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of like not being like very social and like being apart, you know, like Neighbors. You know how like there are all those like TV shows. They're like, be friends with your neighbors. You know, interact with people. It's really the opposite. It's like, everyone's like, just have a pool party at your neighbor's house. You know, they'll totally invite you.
Who's got a pool?
I know.
No, but I know what you're getting. You're getting the alienation, basically.
Alienation, yeah.
And it's the worst here probably of any country in the world, even though it's the richest country in the world. A couple other things about taxing the rich in Seattle that did pass. All the Democrats ended up voting for it, as they were against it, but we developed a mass movement, and the article goes into this really well, that forced the Democrats to get behind taxing the rich because it would have been so embarrassing. And so Adam and Rebecca get into this when they say, we didn't win this because, I'm quoting now from the article again, Counterpunch, July 19th, how Seattle voted to tax the rich. Here is an excellent quote. Please listen carefully, listeners. We didn't win this because Seattle's Democratic Party establishment suddenly began to care about the crushing impact of decades of budget cuts and regressive taxes have had on working people and people of color in the city. Now, I'll add something. Because the Democrats themselves enacted those policies.
Right.
Quote, back to quoting, it was the growing might of our social movements that led to this major victory. The establishment may have ultimately voted yes, quote unquote, but not because they genuinely supported taxing the rich. Mayor Murray and the establishment council members like Tim Burgess and Lorena Gonzalez voted for it because we built a powerful movement over a number of years which made their combined opposition politically unviable. During our election campaign, socialist alternative members spoke with hundreds of thousands of voters at the door and on the phone, held dozens of rallies. I did some of that at the door stuff and on the phone. Yay. And raised a record-breaking $500,000 from ordinary people with a bold and unambiguous demand to, quote, tax the rich. End quote. It was a pillar of our 2015 campaign, and we made it clear to everyone we talked to that we wanted to make big business and the wealthy elite pay to fund public needs. Once elected to Seattle City Council, Shama Sawant worked with activists from the Transit Riders Union on a proposal to remove regressive sales tax and instead fund Seattle's Metro buses with a tax on business and commercial parking fees. We lost that vote, but over the past months, the Transit Riders Union, led by Katie Wilson, spearheaded by the Trump-Proof Seattle Coalition, along with the Economic Opportunity Institute, led by John Burbank, the Trump-Proof Seattle Coalition, of which Social Alternative and Shama Sawant were a part, played a leading role in this year's fight to win Seattle's tax on the rich, etc. So it gets into the details of winning that. One last quote, this model of staking out a bold demand, building a movement independent of the city establishment and relying on our own strength to win, came pretty naturally this time around. Because it's the same model our movement in Seattle, this is Social Alternative, has used in to win the fight for 15, defeat a 400% increase in low-income tenants in housing projects, replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day, defeat a $160 million police precinct proposal, win $29 million of public money for affordable housing, and invest $3 billion from Wells Fargo in solidarity with the No DAPL movement, all in all, in just the last few years. So we're starting a new campaign in Seattle called Affordable Seattle. Three main demands. We'll go into this in future shows. One, massively extend affordable housing. Build tens of thousands of quality city-owned homes paid for by taxing big business. Two, we need rent control. As a first step, require at least 25% of new private sector development to be affordable. Organize a movement for tenant collective bargaining rights to lower rents. Three, make landlords pay for economic evictions. Stop the displacement of low-income households. When renters are forced to move due to major rent hikes, landlords should be required to pay moving costs. www.affordableseattle.net, Facebook, Renters Rise Up, Twitter, at Renters Rise Up. This is what we're working on now, and also supporting two independent candidates in Seattle. Sorry to talk so long with my co-hosts, but yeah, I want to get that out real
quick.
Not
a problem. Actually, I have the article written by James Kahn right in front of me.
The same article?
No, because this is in the
Social
newspaper.
Alternative, right.
Yeah, Affordable Seattle Hits the Doors. And it goes a little bit more into, you know, our perspectives from it. And going into also the two candidates, independent candidates we're supporting out in Seattle, John Grant for city council and mm-hmm. Nikita Oliver for mayor.
Right.
But we have known for a long time, and we've made it part of even in 2013, right after we won 15, we went right to back to affordable housing, and we. Part of the struggle was actually fighting against this new police barracks that the city wanted to put up for millions and millions of dollars. Once again, we used our tactic of grassroots organizing, building a mass movement, and shutting that down quite effectively and saying, all right, now take this money that you wanted to put for this new police barracks and put it towards affordable housing units. And I'm going to bring this now to Worcester, where I'm a branch member
of Socialist Alternative.
We have, you know, a struggle that's been going on for quite a bit. This developer has come in from New Jersey and he's been creating part of this new downtown program to, it's what they call, quote, beautification. What it really is a gentrification program. And what this developer has been doing is been creating these new housing units. And these housing units are, quote unquote, market rate, which is code for you can't afford this.
Mm-hmm.
the market rate. I forget. I was talking to one of the carpenters who, the union carpenters from Worcester, who have been struggling against this developer about how much they're charging for this. And I can't remember the quote off the top of my head, but it's like a $1,400 to rent this apartment, you know.
Wow.
So. Wow.
$1,400 a month, yeah. It's horrible. Before we go on, I just want to, and maybe we could talk about Worcester Organizer. That's a good segue Absolutely. Into that in a second. I have a couple of public service announcements I am duty-bound to read.
Okay.
Boston Green Fest, weekend of August 11th through 13th. Come celebrate the 10th annual Boston Green Fest. It's free. It's fun. It's for everyone. It has live music, dance exhibits, a fashion show, movie screenings, and great food. It's innovative. It's eco-friendly. It's multicultural. Join us for Boston Green Fest at City Hall Plaza and Faneuil Hall for an unforgettable weekend, August 11th to the 13th. And come together to learn, celebrate, and exchange ideas for a greener Massachusetts. Please visit bostongreenfest.org for more information. Now, this one is, believe it or not, Matthew, in our PSA book here, and it's going to sound very familiar. It's good. Numbers to think about, world wealth distribution. Share of global wealth from 2010 to 2015. They've got a chart here. I'm not going to read that. I'll just get into this. Text, the world's 8 richest billionaires control as much wealth as half the world's population combined. Oxfam International. Matthew already brought that up. According to an Oxfam International report presented at the 2017 World Economic Forum in Davos, these eight men own the same as the 3.6 billion people who make up the poorest half of humanity. The world's wealthiest individuals are, 1, Bill Gates, $75 billion. Amancio Ortega, U.S., $67 billion. Warren Buffett, U.S., $60.8 billion. Carlos Slim Ayllu, U.S., $50 billion. Jeff Bezos, U.S., $45.2 billion. Mark Zuckerberg, U.S., $44.6 billion. Larry Ellison, U.S., $43.6 billion. Is that the politician, Larry Ellison? Michael Bloomberg, U.S., $40 billion. So if these guys just came by and we could like mug them and empty their pockets, assuming they carry any cash at all, I mean, you know,
I'm going to update that list. Tiny bit. Just recently, Jeff Bezos became the richest man.
Yeah, then he's lost it back again, though.
Oh, he lost it.
Gates
back.
Came back to number. So he's second. Yeah, but what I was going to say was like, I just want their Trump change.
What would you do with like $50 million? That's like nothing to them.
Well, but think about how little $50,000 is of $50 million. Give me $50,000, and I'll just be dancing for a week. I mean, can you imagine? I would just change my life and Justin's life. Anyway, that's it for our there's a comparison figure I didn't give yet. In 2010, by comparison, it took the combined assets of the 43 richest people, mm-hmm. not just 8, to equal those of the poorest 50. That's a horrible stat, too, though. Since 2009, the wealth of the super rich has increased by an average of 11% annually, while income for many workers has remained essentially unchanged. Absolutely, we talked about that. And this is all numbers to think about from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. I must say I'm more impressed by this PSA, public service announcement, notebook than I've ever been in the past. We've been on the air here for like 10 years, so thank you, whoever put that together in among the staff here. And hold on one second.
Also, go ahead, again, yes. www.affordableseattle.net or their Facebook, Renters Rise Up, or at Twitter. Twitter. Renters Rise Up.
That's for the Affordable Seattle campaign.
Totally. Let's jump. Sorry, go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, I was just going to jump because we were talking about the Worcester Organizer.
Yeah, we're running out of time, so that's probably going to be our last thing. Let's talk about that.
So, once again, I'm in Socialist Alternative in Worcester. We have a publication that we put out right now a little bit inconsistently. It's been kind of bi-monthly/monthly. We're working on our latest edition. It's called the Worcester Organizer. It's a free publication, so we kind of leaflet it wherever we can and hand it out when we are in conversation with people. Now we have one of our comrades, Claire, has worked really hard on making it into a little WordPress page, and I want to just give that to everybody. It's WorcesterOrganizer.wordpress.com.
Worcester Organizer, all one word.
Yes, Worcester Organizer, all one word. We have a Facebook page, The Worcester Organizer, at Worcester Organizer. I don't think we have a Twitter at this point.
Also, Worcester, just so people know, because the way we're giving it its proper pronunciation, it's actually spelled W-O-R-C-E-S-T-E-R, like a city in England, which is probably pronounced Worcester or something, you know.
Oh, it is.
But this is Worcester. Worcester. In here in Massachusetts, W-O-R-C-E-S-T-E-R.
But yeah, so with the Worcester Organizer features mostly local news in Worcester, but we have written a lot of national perspectives as well, particularly on, let's see, we had one on the healthcare, battling for healthcare. All these articles are going to be on the WordPress site that we just launched this past week, which is very exciting. It's actually really well built too. I don't know if you've taken a look at
it. Yeah, I'm extremely impressed. It's really high level.
Yeah. So, but this publication, it goes over some of the stuff. So, resist cuts to the WRTA. That was an article written by one of.
And that's the bus system in Worcester.
Right. So this is what we're talking about, especially with Charlie Baker wanting to privatize the transportation.
He's doing it. He's getting away with it, unfortunately. Yeah. Sorry.
Which is another union that'll be killed, assuming the entire thing, assuming he gets his way in its entirety. And that has had a lot of...
That's their goal, definitely.
Yeah.
That's an article by Jai Chavez, Chavis, resist cuts to the WRTA, because they just raised the bus fares in Worcester without any real warning, and cuts routes, and the article gets into this, that will prevent people from keeping their jobs. It's really horrible, actually. In the context of Worcester being a poorer city than Boston, this was devastating.
And it has a poorer public transportation system. There's no...
Oh, there's no subway. Yeah,
there's no subway. Yeah. Getting around Worcester is very difficult don't have your own car.
Yeah, it forces a lot of people to get cars and get into deep car debt for... as you know, as some of our listeners know, but in case you don't use a car or you're from another country, cars in the U.S., car debt... Well, you have these... Okay, what is debt in the United States? It's usually healthcare debt because we have no healthcare system. Really? It's student debt, exactly, college, and it's car debt and credit card debt, which is related to all of those. Car debt is the exorbitant amount of money one must pay to buy a car, and that takes a loan usually, 99% of the time, I would say. Then repairing the car all the time, and the repairs are getting more and more expensive all the time. And buying insurance for the car mandated by the state and with very steep fines and inability to drive if you break that law, you must get car insurance. These things are horrific. And then they talk about, you know, the liberal part of the corporate media or whatever will talk about, oh, look at all these new green technologies with cars. You know, I just laugh at that because the statistics are still you have about 1% of cars on the road are electric. And you have a certain hybrid amount. But if you look at the hybrid cars... That's what I was getting at. Exactly. Go ahead.
It's impossible to buy them.
Exactly.
They're like $50,000.
Yep, exactly.
You know?
40, 30, 40, even 30 is too much.
Yeah.
Exactly what I was going to say, but I was going to add one thing to that. That if people were serious in the environmental movement, and some are, but if more people were serious in the environmental movement, they would be anti-capitalist, they would be socialist, and part of a transitional demand towards that would be with cars. The government must subsidize heavily the price of electric cars and get involved in the manufacturing of electric cars and mandating through regulations the manufacture of electric cars, even under capitalism. And you could start this whole flood of electric cars, right, into the so-called market, and people would be able to afford them. And that's how you could transform, literally probably within a year, from internal combustion, oil-guzzling, gas-spewing, blah, blah, cars, to... electric cars. That wouldn't be the solution to everything, but it could happen really, really fast. The technology is there. It's just a question of it's too expensive. And it's not being developed. You know, any big jumps in development are usually government-run, contrary to what the capitalists tell you. And if you put the government got the government more involved in research and production of electric automobiles, it would be huge. It would be huge. Yeah, Matthew just looked at the time. We got about 5 minutes. So it's going to get into like last words. For anything you wanted to say, you didn't get to say, now's the time.
Bye.
No, don't say bye yet. 5 minutes.
We have 5 minutes to organize the working masses.
Well, I'll just riff on what you started, Matthew. Worcester Organizer, we got a subheading, Workers Built Worcester, Now Fight for Worcester's Workers. Yes, we're having this radio show here in more east, in eastern Massachusetts, in Cambridge, Somerville, Medford, Boston. But Worcester is the second largest city in New England. Uh-huh. Boston has a big presence of socialist alternative, relatively speaking, to the rest of the left. But we also are building that in Worcester as well, and everywhere we can. And so this Worcester Organizer, the context for it is there is a national paper for Socialist Alternative called Socialist Alternative. We encourage everyone listening to get a copy, get a subscription. Go to socialistalternative.org for more info on how to do that. It's a monthly paper. It's really excellent. But being a monthly and being of a certain limited size, we cannot fit where all the local news that Socialist Alternative is a part of or generating or whatever from all the different areas that we exist in now in the United States. It's a big country. So what we're going to try to move to is a more frequent paper. Then we'll get more local news in there, I think, every 2 weeks, maybe a weekly eventually, hopefully, and not too far in the future. But in the meantime, some branches put out local newsletters. And here in Worcester, we're putting out the Worcester Organizer. In Boston, I used to be involved in putting out the Boston Organizer a little bit. That was something the branch did there, branches did there in the past. So looking at this Worcester Organizer, it's issue 5. Just came out for July. We're going to try with another issue in a few weeks, yep, end of August, for all the students returning and more. We got a note of Trump Care stuff, Join Socialist Alternative, Battling for Health Care, article by Claire Baylor, article by Jai, we already talked about. Everin has an article. Everin O'Laher. I never had to say his name out loud.
I believe it's just O'Laher.
O'Laher.
It's Irish.
Yeah, the way he spells it is O.
Well, he uses accent, the traditional Irish spelling.
Apostrophe L-A-O-G-H-A-I-R-E. Anyway, Struggle for a Fair Contract for the MTA, Massachusetts Teachers Association Union in Worcester, called the Education Association of Worcester. They're being screwed around by the city government, not given a decent contract.
And the other article is the Massachusetts Millionaire Tax by Ryan Hartman.
Oh, I missed that one. Thank you very much.
That's on the last page.
And we didn't get to going into more detail about Minneapolis. We're running a candidate, Ginger Jensen. We'll talk about that next time. Go to, she's running in Ward 3 in Minneapolis. Go to gingerjensen.org. That's all J-E-N-T-Z-E-N for last name. Gingerjensen.org. Go to Facebook, vote Ginger Jensen. G-I-N-G-E-R-G-E-N-T-Z-E-N. Two separate words. Twitter, at Ginger Jensen. And then there's a, what does it mean when you put the hashtag? Hashtag Team Ginger.
Oh, is that that's a Twitter thing.
Twitter. That's another Twitter thing? Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like Team a tag Ginger, so people can find other posts.
Right. No, I've seen it a lot. Okay. I just forgot what it was about because I'm not on Twitter. You've been listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. We did not get into this. Committee for Workers International has its largest international CWI school, culminating in a unification conference, Congress, with Izquierda Revolucionaria, which is a group in Spain, fairly large as far as the left goes, with other groups in Mexico and Venezuela, and I think maybe one other country, and they've joined the Committee for Workers International, and there was a big school about that. I can just give the headline. Over 400 revolutionary socialists from 31 countries attended the week-long school in Barcelona, of all places. I wish I could have been there. In some cases, reflecting the strides forward, which the CWI has taken in a recent period, a large and vibrant delegation from Socialist Alternative in the USA was there, by the way. And there's a whole article about it if you go to socialistworld.net. This is from July 28th. Yeah, Barcelona is this incredibly beautiful city in Spain, and where they speak not just Spanish, but Catalan, and they want their independence, and we support that. Independence for Catalan. So now you've really got like very little time. Please say goodbye. Last words.
You go first.
Oh, goodness. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. You've been a pleasure to be here, Jeff. Thanks for having
me on. Thanks for coming on. You should come on again. Seriously, Matthew.
I will do my best.
You're very good at the radio. Like I said, I think it's easy, but not everybody gets it. Exactly. You seem to get it, so that's great. My son, Justin.
Bye, guys. Hope you guys enjoyed.
great. Thank you, Justin. Thanks for coming. I really enjoyed bringing you
it
here.
It was fun.
We had a good talk in the car on the way here, mm-hmm. and it was great. So thanks again for listening. You're going to experience a little bit of radio silence here as we switch over to a auto DJ, but you've been listening live to Social Alternative Radio. I'm your host, Jeff. Check us out in 2 weeks. Go to our Facebook page, Social Alternative Radio. Lots of new posts. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and keep up the